All right, so we're holding on Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Keva Oyv Techavim B'Shal Neveira. Now, the Keva is the fourth stomach of an animal. When we talk over here in our Gemara about Keva, we're going to be talking about Keva and we're going to talk about Urch Keva. Keva means the contents of the stomach. Now, what happens is, in a baby animal, if nursing, boys, we're learning Torah over here. Boys, we're learning Torah over here. If you want to have a conversation, can you find someplace else to have it, please? Thank you. Okay, so keva is the stomach contents. We're talking about particularly an animal that's nursing, a baby animal that's nursing. So it has milk in its stomach, and that milk has in it rennet, which is an enzyme which in the stomach, it curdles it and then digests it. And you can also use it, though, to make cheese. You use that enzyme to make cheese. So our Mishnah and our Gemara are going to be talking about using that milk, and we're also going to be talking about using the skin of the keva, meaning the actual stomach lining itself for making cheese. So the Mishnah starts off, keva ovid kachav mishal nevela. The keva, meaning the stomach contents, the congealed milk that's in the stomach of an animal that was killed by a goy. Vishal Nevela, or an animal which is Nevela, and we'll see in the Gemara that an animal that was killed by a goy is Nevela. Why mention it separately? So we'll get to that. Harezu Asura, the cheese that's made with that rennet that comes from that milk would be Asur, because the milk itself is also having come from a Nevela. And in general, you have a rule that anything that comes from a Tame animal is itself Tame. Hamamid Ba'osho Keva Kshera, on the other hand, if you make cheese, mamid means literally to make it stand. So in other words, you take cheese and you take milk rather, and you curdle it to make cheese. That's mamid, using the skin, meaning using the actual stomach lining of the keva of a kshera, of an animal which is kosher. Now there you don't have a problem with the skin that the stomach itself is also, because it comes from a kosher animal. But you have an issue of bas b'cholav. And you have, by the way, Ksheira over here, the Hagoy Tabak takes it out, and a number of other Meporshim point out reasons to say that there's really no difference, because when we talk about, we're going to talk about in the Gemara, about the issues involving the skin, involving using the actual stomach lining itself, and at least according to some opinions, as we're going to see, we're going to talk about what Rashi holds and what the Reis holds, et cetera. According to some opinions, there's no difference, actually, we'll talk about what Rashi holds, but there's not necessarily a difference whether we're talking about the stomach lining of a kosher animal or not. So we'll see. So the point is,
One second.
Let's learn the Mishnah. Let's learn what Rashi has to say, because Rashi has a very long discussion on it on the base, and that will probably answer your question. So Hamamed Ba'osh or Kevach Sheder, if a person makes cheese using the skin, meaning using the actual stomach lining of a kosher animal, or maybe not even of a kosher animal, it may not make a difference. Im Yesh Benoisin Tam, if there's enough of it in the cheese to give it a flavor that now the cheese tastes of meat, harezu asura, then the cheese will be osur. Now, so Rashi mentions it. So Rashi starts by talking about over here, what would happen, first of all, let's talk about the case. Rashi says, suppose that, now you take the stomach, suppose we're talking about a stomach from a kosher animal, you salt it, and while you salted it, you already had in it milk that was in the animal's stomach when it was shafted. Do you have a problem there or not? So Rashi says, so Rashi starts by saying that it would be also, it would be bas b'cholav. He says, v'en v'yobi koyach lahatar. I have no koyach to say that it's mutter. Then Rashi says, you have some people who argue it should be mutter on the grounds of that it's not barnaf, like we learned a few days ago about cheese, about hot fish that was put in a fleshic plate. The difference, and therefore, in other words, so now what you have is this milk that was in the stomach got a tam from the stomach when they were salted together. Later on, when you put it into the cheese and it gives it a flavor, it's not barnaf. But Rashi says, no. These two cases are as far apart as east and west. There's absolutely no comparison between them. Because between the case of the fish and the fleshic plate versus over here, the milk that was in the stomach when it was salted. Because, because with the fish, you have the fish themselves are completely mutter at that point. Fish in a meat in a flaccid plate don't become ulcer. Okay, there may be a health issue involved, but there's no kosher issue involved. Later on, you want to eat them together with milk. Okay, you're arguing that it has a taste of meat, but that's not really a taste. It's only not by not. But over here, the problem is if you have the milk inside the keva, the problem is, like now our Mishnah is mentioning the problem that you may have nois and tam, that it gives it a flavor, and therefore what it means is you end up with a complete iser, chaticha nafas nevela. So now any flavor that comes out of this milk that was in there when you salted it inside the stomach is going to, any flavor that comes out of it is already intrinsically also, chaticha nafas nevela. And everybody agrees chaticha nafas nevela applies to basa b'chala. So therefore, no good. Plus, in fact, Rashi says it would be even worse because you already have min b'mino. You have milk mixed with milk, and according to Rashi's shitta, such a thing is never bottled. So therefore, so Rashi says it won't work. And then Rashi goes on to say I used to think that it was mutter. And then Rashi says, no, but toya hayisi b'kach. No, I was making a mistake on that. Why? Because that this idea over here, when you have the milk inside the stomach, when it was salted, that it should be mutter, that milk should be mutter. Rashi says, originally I thought that it was mutter, based on a similar logic to what we were saying before. But then he says, no, it doesn't, well, not because of the logic of before, because not by not. He thought originally it was mutter for a different reason. Because the milk that's in the stomach is not considered milk at that point. It's considered like kirsha ba'alma. It's considered like waste. And therefore, it can't become also as basa b'chala. Now, Rashi says there is indeed such a concept. However, in the case that we're talking about over here, in our Mishnah, and in this case, when he salted the stomach with the milk inside, then it's considered, then as we're going to see later on in the Mishnah, as we're going to see in our Mishnah further, that it's considered 100% full-fledged milk. Therefore, we have a problem of basa b'chala. So the bottom line is, according to Rashi, is that you, as long as you have, again, as long as like our Mishnah is saying, if you have enough meat to give a flavor into the milk, then it doesn't matter whether we're talking about other milk that this piece was put into to make it into cheese, or whether we're talking about the actual milk that you found in the stomach. Either way, it's going to be also as basa b'chala. So therefore, it comes out, in other words, according to Rashi, there's not really necessarily much of a difference whether the stomach came from, whether the stomach piece that you used for curdling the milk to make cheese, there's not really that much of a difference whether it came from a kosher animal or not. If it's nois and tam, either way, it's going to be ulcer. It's going to be ulcer as basa b'chala, or it's going to be ulcer as nevela, either way.
The milk is also
the milk that you found in the that you found in the stomach. If you salted it with inside the stomach, then it's considered. Then the stomach gives it a flavor. Therefore, that milk already itself becomes ulcer, and now you can't use it to make cheese. Now that's all according to Rashi. On the other hand, the Rif holds the opinion that Rashi rejects, which is that you can consider the milk that's in the stomach over there as though it was pirsha b'alma. Therefore, he says, now, therefore, that's why you have the distinction that we're saying. The milk that you find in the stomach of a kosher animal is definitely not a problem. The problem would be, according to Rashi, if you had salted it inside the stomach. But according to the Rif, it doesn't matter. That milk is always going to be considered pirsha ba'alma. Therefore, even if you salted the stomach with the milk still inside, that milk, and even though therefore now you have a flavor of meat in that milk that was in the stomach, then you don't have a problem using that milk to using the rennet in that milk to curdle milk and to curdle other milk and make it into cheese, because it'll be not by not basically.
So
therefore it won't be a problem. So therefore it won't be tricked. Now if you use the stomach lining or the stomach contents of a nevela animal, as we said in the Mishnah, there you have a different issue because there the nevela itself is intrinsically also. Here you only have the issue is basa b'chala. And since basa by itself is mutter and chala by itself is mutter, and the chala we're talking about over here is, here we're talking about where the chala that was in the stomach is not considered food anymore, it's considered waste, then you don't have a problem.
That is if you salt it, but if you...
No, in other words, again, according to the Rif, the point would be that any milk that you find in the stomach of a kosher animal is going to be mutter, regardless whether it has a flavor of meat in it or not, because it's considered pirsha ba'alma. And therefore, also, Now we're saying in our Mishnah that if you use a piece of the stomach lining to make cheese, so we're saying if there's no tam, then it's osur, implying that if not, it's mutter. Still doesn't mean l'chachila you should do that, because you can't be mevakel itzel l'chachila. But on the other hand, but nevertheless, it is mutter as long as the skin itself wasn't from a nevela. So we have to distinguish, in other words, between a number of different issues over here. There's the issue of if you're using the stomach contents, then it's strictly a matter of did it come from a nevela versus did it come from a ksheira. If they don't have a flavor of meat at all, if they have a flavor of meat, then according to Rashi, you have a problem because it's considered milk. According to the Rif, it's not. And then the Rambam also passes in the same way. So it's Pirsha Balma. The fact that it has a meat flavor is neither here nor there.
If the meat has a flavor of milk, can you eat it?
If
the stomach has a flavor of milk.
Probably not then, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. Could be. I guess maybe not. But in this case, the stomach is not considered pirsha b'alma. The milk is considered pirsha b'alma. Blastus, the stomach is like any other piece of meat. So therefore, blastus would be also in that case.
You mean if you talk to the stomach and...
If, let's say, whatever, however it came about, that there's a stomach and having...
Well, it wouldn't be because pirsha b'alma.
Oh, because it got a flavor from pirsha b'alma? Could be. Yeah, maybe you're right. Okay, I don't know.
But according to
Rashi, yeah. And
so
then...
Where does Rashi and the Rif argument come from about whether it's pirsha b'alma or not?
Because Rashi quotes a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that explains over there that the milk there is pirsha b'alma, but the Rashi says that's different than our case over here.
Natured milk, basically.
Well, so actually Tosfos, now that you mention it, Tosfos takes a bit of a middle view. Tosfos basically learns our sugya like Rashi, but they learn that in this case, we're talking about over here, there's a difference between if you have liquid milk in there, which is still considered milk, versus if you have it's already congealed, like already partially digested in there, where there it would be considered pirsha b'alma. Rashi would consider all of it milk, the Rif and the Rambam would consider all of it to be pirsha b'alma. So the Tosfos takes a bit of a middle view. Yeah, depending on the status of it, right?
How do we make kosher cheese?
So how do we make kosher cheese? So either we use the keva, either we use the stomach contents, and that's not a problem because they don't, as long as they don't have a flavor of meat in them.
So Rashi's talking about it's up to when you salted it.
Yeah.
Then it's not pure shabbat.
Right, if you
so
salted
Rashi
it with the milk inside.
Okay.
Rashi would be okay using the milk that you found in the stomach to curdle cheese, yes, as long as it comes from a kosher animal. Rashi's problem would be if he salted it together with the stomach and now it absorbed flavor and now it absorbed meat flavor, right?
Is it,
so that's one possibility.
Is it possible to make cheese like that?
Yeah, you can, because the milk there has rennet in it, so you can. The other possibility is what you can do is, again, our Mishnah had said that you could, that if you were to use the stomach lining itself and it didn't have nois and tam, then it would be mutter. Still doesn't mean it's allowed to do the chachila. However, the Rish says if you salted the stomach by itself, so it's completely dried out, then even the chachila you're allowed to use it to make cheese. Lamaita nowadays, for the most part, I think they use synthetic rennet anyway. They use synthetic or vegetable-based or vegetable-based or whatever. Okay. Right. Okay. So let's go on.
Because synthetic ingredients that come from an animal.
Well, obviously, if they come from an animal, right.
Synthetic.
Right. Okay.
Basically, they need acid.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Let's go on.
Wherever it comes from.
Okay. It's more than acid. It's a certain enzyme. Okay. Let's go on. If you have a kosher animal nursed from a trefa animal, and the contents of its stomach are also because it came from the trefa animal. On the other hand, it's the other way around. A trefa animal nursed from a kosher one, what you find in its stomach is mutter, because just gathered in its stomach, it's not a secretion from its own body. And therefore it's mutter. Not really. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. When the Mishnah started off, the keva of an animal that was killed by a goy or a nevela, aren't they the same thing? Of an animal killed by a goy, a nevela, by definition. The answer is but what we're talking about over here, when we say kevas ovid kachavim, what we mean is like this. We don't mean that the goy killed it. We mean you bought a live gdi, a live animal from a goy, and then you shechted it. eyes, you would think, so you could argue, what's the problem? Hashinim, Shema Yomach Minat Shefa. We have to be concerned that maybe while the guy owned the animal, he had it nursed from a Shefa, and we said at the end of our Mishnah that if a kosher animal nurses from a Shefa, then the milk is osur. So that would be the reason why if you use now the Keva, the stomach contents of this new animal, this baby animal, to make cheese, then you would have a problem.
Wait, if it was genetic from a Shefa,
if it was genetic from a
cow that is not going to live too long?
Yeah, yeah. No. A cow that has an injury that's not going to live very long. Yeah.
So that
it could also mean from a non-kosher.
Very careful not to.
That's what we're going to get. That's what we're going to get to. Right? So the question is, Mishashin and Shami Yonak Menachem.
Treifa means really
treifa. Bepashtos means treifa. Yeah, bepashtos. Yeah. So the question is, Mishashin and Shami Yonak Menachem. Are we really concerned about that? If you buy an animal from a goy that might have nursed from a treifa, well, it's not. It's on Tanya really, because the brayta loichin based him in a ovtachavim. You're allowed to buy eggs from goyim. The ain choshin lo mishum nevela, lo mishum treifa. You don't have to worry about nevela or treifa. Maybe the chicken that they came from was nevela, or maybe it was treifa, because usually we go and the fact is, if they were, then it would be also. But you go according to the roiv, and roiv chickens are not nevelas and treifas, which is why you're able to go to the store and buy a carton of eggs.
You see the simon too. That is pointy on one.
No. That tells you that it's from a kosher species. That doesn't tell you whether the individual. So why? So by the same logic, why should we have to be concerned that the baby animal nursed from a treifa from a treifa animal? Ella Ema, no, you're right. We have to correct it. Chayshinim shem yonach minat tmeya. Right. Not the concern is that it may have nursed from a treifa animal, where treifas are not that common, but rather it may have nursed from a tmeya. It may have nursed from a horse or a chazer or whatever. That's different. So the question is, in that case, why would Rav Huna say that we're worried about that it may have nursed from a tmeya but not from a treifa? The difference is exactly that. Treifa lo shchicha, tmeya shchicha, because a treifa is not very common, whereas behemoth tmeyas are very common, and goyim have lots of them, and they don't see a distinction between them. Yeah. So therefore, yeah. So the question is, if you're going to tell me behemoth tmeyas are common, afilu gabedidan nechush, then even if you bought an animal from a yid, it should be also, because maybe it nursed from a goy, not from a goy, maybe it nursed from a behemoth tmeya, maybe it nursed from a horse or whatever. The answer is anand, but linen minayhu. The difference is, we Jews know to keep away from behemoth tmeyas, not to eat anything that comes from them. So if we ever do see, for example, a calf nursing from a horse, we will separate it, because we don't want it to be growing on milk that it got from a behemoth mare. No, at that point, you just see it starting to nurse, let's say. So, and remember, eventually it gets digested. We're talking about if shortly afterwards you were to shift it and find milk in the stomach. Eventually the milk gets digested and passes out. Yeah. Okay.
So you wait enough time.
Yeah, obviously. So therefore, like Gozer, we heard about, and therefore the Chachamim didn't find a need to be Gozer maybe one time your cow, your calf nursed from your horse, because it's not a very common thing. Inhu deloy b'dilu minayu, as opposed to the goyim, don't stay away from behemoth tmeyas.
V'chichazu lehu lo machushi lehu. They do, because the quality is different.
They don't have an objection to eating behemoth tmeyas. They eat pig.
No, they don't make tmeyas nurture.
They're not going to make them do it, but if it happens, they're not necessarily going to separate it. Even if they see a calf nursing from a horse, they're not necessarily going to separate it. Therefore, Gozru heard Abanan. Therefore, according to Rav Huna, the Chachamim had reason to make a Gzera that, and therefore, so again, according to Rav Huna, Kevas over to Chavim of our Mishnah does not mean the Keva contents of an animal that was killed by a goy. It means the Keva contents of an animal that was bought by a goy and then obviously shefted shortly afterwards, where there's reason to be concerned that it may have nursed from a tmeya. All that's one explanation. Ushmuel Amar, Shmuel says, no, that's not what the Mishnah means. Chodeh Katoni. The Mishnah isn't saying two separate things, Nevela and Ovid Kachavim. It's saying one thing, Kevas Shchitas Ovid Kachavim, which is Nevela. So we are talking about that it was shechted by a goy. We're not nothing to concern about nursing. Shmuel is not concerned about the nursing situation. He's just explaining that it means the Mishnah is telling us the cave of an animal that was killed by a goy, which happens to be nevela.
He would not, in other words,
he's not concerned about the nursing situation. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, umi ama Shmuel hachi? Did Shmuel really say that the cave of a nevela is osur? That automatically, if you have an Avela animal, the stomach contents of it are automatically Usur. Va'amar Shmuel, but we find that Shmuel says in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara discusses over there, you have a Mishnah there that mentions that cheese made by Goyim is Usur. And you have a lot of discussion, some part of it in the Mishnah, which we're going to mention in a second, and more in the Gemara, about why is cheese made by Goyim Osir? Because the premise behind the question is that the milk of non-kosher animals is not able to curdle into cheese the way the milk of kosher animals can. You can make cheese from the milk of cows, sheep, goats, maybe wild animals as well, but you can't make it out of the milk of horses or pigs or what have you. The fat, the milk fat content is different, whatever it is exactly, the reason is...
Take the enzymes of the stomach from...
Never mind the enzyme. Yeah, if you were to take rennet or what have you and put it in horse's milk or pig's milk or whatever, you're not going to get cheese. So therefore, on the face of it, why should cheese made by goyim be ulcer? On the face of it, it has to have been made from kosher milk.
Right.
So the Mishnah starts by discussing it over there in Avodah Zarah, and the Gemara continues, and Shmuel gives a reason, why did the Chachamim declare cheese made by Goyim Osir? And the reason was, and Shmuel says the reason is because Goyim commonly make cheese by putting in there a piece of the stomach lining of a Nevela. And we said before that's a problem, because Nevela is intrinsically
Osir.
I don't know, I doubt they still do that nowadays, but I don't know. Ha keva gufa shaya, implying, according to Shmuel, if they had used the keva, the stomach contents, even though it came from a nevela, it would have been mutter. So therefore, you see that Shmuel holds that the keva of a nevela is mutter. So how is he explaining on Mishnah to say that the keva of an animal killed by a goy is osir, and if you would make cheese with it, then the cheese is osir?
So it's only if it's an nevela that it's osir, implying that if it's not a nevela,
because an animal killed by a goy is nevela.
Right.
But the question is, over there in Avodah Zarah, Shmuel is saying that the problem is not that they use the keva, the stomach contents, to make cheese, but to curdle other milk in the cheese, but rather that they use the skin, that they use the lining of the stomach, implying only because they use an actual piece of nevela is it also. But if they use the stomach contents, even though it came from inside a nevela, that's not also. And yet, on the other hand, he's explaining...
The stomach contents of an nevela is not asur?
Our Mishnah had said, Kevas over Kechavim Mishon Nevela HaRezu Asura. Shmuel is explaining that Kevas over Kechavim means the keva, the stomach contents of an animal killed by a goat, which would imply, in other words, that if you use that to make cheese, it would be asur. But in Avodah Zarah, in the sugya about cheese, Shmuel is not saying the problem is that they use the keva. He says the problem is they use the keva, implying the keva itself is mutter, even though it came from a nevela. Because it's not part of the actual animal. It's only the stomach content. What do you mean play on words?
Keva.
No. Keva versus keva.
No, one a second. Keva is the...
No, keva. Absolutely not. Keva is the keva? Stomach content. I've been explaining the whole time. We've just been talking for 20 minutes. Keva means the stomach content. Means the milk that you find in the animal after it nursed and then you shafted it. That is called keva. The actual lining...
At the beginning of the set, the keva was...
Earlier when we talked about this, yes, earlier when we were talking about the anatomy of the animal, we used the word keva to mean the stomach. In our sugya, that's why I started by saying that keva over here means the stomach contents, and keva means the stomach lining. So therefore, again, over here, our missionary is saying the keva of an Urkechavim is Osir, and Shmuel is explaining because it's Nevela, but over there he's not saying that it's Nevela, he's saying only the actual lining is Nevela and is a problem. So what is it? What does Shmuel hold? The answer is, like Hasha, Kan Kodem Chazorah, Kan Ma'acha Chazorah. There's no contradiction between Shmuel's two statements because one is talking about before the change of mind and the other one is talking after the change of mind. So what do we mean by that? Okay, so let me explain. Rashi brings from Masechta Avodah Zarah. Again, you have the Mishnah starts off over there with Rabbi Shmuel asking Rabbi Yeshua, why did the Chachamim assert cheese made by goyim? So Rabbi Yeshua started by answering because they use the keva, they use the stomach contents, they use the curdled milk that you find in the stomach of a nursing animal as starter for the cheese. So Rabbi Shmuel says that doesn't work because after all, we know that to eat from an oila is a more stringent aveira than to eat from a nevela. Because both of them are an isur lav, and an oila is additionally, if a tome eats an oila, he's chayv kares, and a regular person eats it, he's chayv from me'ila, etc. And yet the fact is that we say that a koyin would be allowed to drink, to swallow down that milk that you find in the stomach of an oila. So that doesn't work. It can't be because they use the keva. So then, So then Rabbi Yeshua changes his mind. So that's, so again, we have Kodim Chazara, where Rabbi Yeshua said the problem is that they use Keva, the stomach contents. That's Kodim Chazara. Then you have Acha Chazara. Then you have later on, Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind and said the reason is, and he said the reason is because they use the Keva of calves of Avodah Zarah. Now, Avodah Zarah is different, because anything that comes from an animal of Avodah Zarah, even the waste of it, is also. So, in other words, the Gemara goes on to discuss over there, yeah, the whole question to how many, after all said and done, I mean, how many animals of Goyim are used for Avodah Zarah, after all, the mayor is Chayesh L'Miyotah, the Chachamim are not. The upshot is, the Gemara says over there, that Rabbi Yeshua did not want to tell Rabbi Shmuel the real reason. And the Gemara explains over there, we learned it, when we learned this part, is because the Gzera had only recently been made. And the Chachamim, when they make a new Gzera, they don't always want to reveal the reason for it right away, because people are going to think, oh, that reason doesn't really apply, doesn't really make sense, or whatever, and therefore they're going to be makel on the new Issur. Once a certain amount of time has passed, 12 months, and people are used to the new Issur, then we can tell the real reason. So at this point, this discussion took place during the 12 months. Therefore, Rabbi Yeshua didn't want to tell Rabbi Shmuel, and the Gemara winds up with a half a dozen opinions of Amoraim why exactly the Chachamim answered it. Anyway, the point is that you have Rabbi Yeshua Kodim Chazara and Acha Chazara. Kodim Chazara, where he said that even the Keva from a Nevela would be Osir. And Acha Chazara, where he says, you're right, the Keva of a Nevela would not make cheese Osir that you use this as a starter for, only if it was Keva Avodah Zarah. Very well then, Shmuel, when he's explaining our Mishnah, is talking about Keva Ovetuchavim, meaning the actual Keva, the stomach content, that's talking Kodim Chazara. That's talking according to Rabbi Yeshua's opinion before he changed his mind. Shmuel's explanation in Avodah Zarah, the ultimate reason, according to Shmuel, for the Gzeira on Goyish cheese, is Lacha Chazarah, where the problem isn't the Keva, but rather the problem is the Keva. So therefore, no contradiction, because Shmuel's talking about two different periods.
It doesn't say,
but I mean, I guess since the discussion was going on between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yeshua, it must have been in fairly short order. But the point was, there was a period of time when Rabbi Yeshua assumed, and the other Chachamim followed him, I guess, that the Keva of a Nevela is Osir and would make cheese that you used it for Osir. And our Mishnah goes according to that opinion. In that case, La'acha Chazara, we know that's not the issue. Fine, you have a concept called Mishnah Lezazim in the Kaima. The Mishnah doesn't move from its place. Once the Mishnah is composed, then it often stays that way. So then Tosfos mentions in this connection, speaking of this whole opinion of Rashi's about what happens if the stomach is salted with the milk inside. So Tosfos says, based on what we're saying over here, technically you should be allowed to use Kevas Nevela. Lamaisa, Tosfos says the Velt holds that it's Osir, and therefore that you shouldn't buy Keva from a goy to use for starter for milk. The Dievet, it would be Mutter, because unless it was salted inside the stomach, then it would be Mutter.
So after Chazara,
only the stomach lining is Osir, because that's part of the Nevela itself, not the content. That would technically be Mutter, except Tosfos says the Velt holds that the Velt is no existing.
Okay. It breaks the principle of what comes from something that's tummy.
Because it's not really coming from something that's tummy, it's the stomach contents, just like we said at the end of the Mishnah. That a tummy animal nursed from a tahar animal, stomach contour, not tummy animal, whatever, a terefa animal nursed from a kosher animal, the milk inside its stomach is kosher because it came from the outside. It's not part of the animal itself.
The stomach contents,
meaning, you know, there's the milk inside the stomach. Where did it come from? It came from the mother that it nursed from.
The milk inside the stomach, but I'm talking about the stomach contents.
And I'm talking about, when I say the stomach contents, that's what we mean, the milk inside the stomach. The stomach itself is what we're calling the stomach lining over here. Keep that straight over here. Keva over here means the milk that you find inside the stomach. Or keva means the stomach itself. Okay. Fine.
So
it's not such a subtle point. It's not morphing definition.
Keva over here means the milk in the stomach.
Yes. That's what it means.
It's very confusing.
It's not so confusing if you pay attention. All right, let's go on. Amar Rav Chiya ba'Aba Amar Rav Yechanan, ma'amidin b'kevas nevelus, ve'ein ma'amidin b'kevas shchitas over tuchavim. Now, Rav Chiya Abba says in the name of Rav Yechanan, there is a distinction. You're allowed to use the keva, again, the milk inside the stomach of a nevela, to make cheese, to use a sorter for cheese, but you're not allowed to use the keva, the stomach contents, of an animal that was shechted by a goy. Now, what's the difference? Amar the fun of Rav Shimon Bar Abba. Come on, which opinion is that following? Are you going according to Rav Eliezer in that? That he says that in general, when a goy shechts unspecified, he automatically, you can assume he has avodah zarah in mind, and therefore Rav Eliezer would say that anything shechted by a goy is automatically also b'hanah, even the waste from it. Apparently, because that's why you're saying that if it was actually killed by a goy, then it's also b'hanah, because we assume that he had a thought for avodah zarah, as opposed to if it's just plain nevela. No. Amalei, and so Rav Chiya Bar Abba answers, yes, the Ela Kaman, nu, and who else do you think I'm going according to? Yes, I'm exactly that. I'm following Rabbi Eliezer's opinion in that. Okay, but then, later on, when Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, not like Rav Chiya Bar Abba said, that you're allowed to use Kevas Nevela, but not Kevas Shchitas Oved Tuchavim. Well, Rabbi Yitzchak said, no, we don't have to be concerned about Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. We don't say, we assume when the average goy, when he's killing an animal, does not have avodah zarah in mind. Therefore, it doesn't become also b'hanah. It's just also b'achila, like any other nevela. But therefore, there's no difference between the keva of an animal, the stomach contents of the animal killed by the goy, versus an animal that died naturally. Either way, not complete reversal, but Rav Chiya Bar Abba had said there's a difference between Nevelos and Oved Kochavim, because we're going according to Rabbi Eliezer. And yeah, the second opinion says we're not concerned about Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore either one would be equally mutter. Again, only the milk. Again, we're only talking about the milk inside there. The actual lining itself would be also, because again, that's a chesed of Isser. That's the thing. Then the Rambam points out the distinction, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if you're using keva, then we're saying it's mutter, technically. If you're using the lining of the stomach, then it depends. If it comes from a kosher animal, the only potential problem is bas v'chalav. So as long as it doesn't have a tam, then it's allowed. Or at least b'dieven. And again, as the Rambam says, if you salted it so it's dry and it has no flavor, then it would be mutter even like a chila. If you use the stomach lining from a nevela or an animal that was killed by a goy, which is also a nevela, that would be also because there the issue isn't bas b'chalav. There the issue is that you have a dover hamami. You have something that's being used, something that's essential to the finished product. Because without that, you don't have cheese, and that is not even bottled, even be'ela.
As long as there's no tam.
So no, if it's from a nevela, then it would be a problem, even if there's no tam. Because even a dover hamami is not bottled, even be'ela. But if we're talking about if it's a piece of the stomach lining of a kosher animal, then it can be mutter as long as there's no nois and tam, because then you don't have a chesed of isser. The isser only comes about when you have milk and meat together, and here, since and therefore, since over here you don't have a flavor of meat in it, then therefore it can be mutter, it can be bottled. That's the distinction. Yes.
So tam does make a difference.
Tam makes a difference only when you're using the lining from a kosher animal. If you're using the lining from a nevela, it doesn't make a difference.
Do we say here tam
ke'ikar? Well, we would be saying tam, yeah. Okay, fine. The hilchos, though, then it would be also either way.
Also either way.
Well, right, that's it. The hilchos, so the bottom line halacha, ein ma'min ba'ur kevas nevela, you're not allowed to curdle milk to make cheese using the lining of the stomach of a nevela, because it's intrinsically osir, and therefore it's not bottled. Avomam, and it's not bottled because the dover amam, because something essential for the finished product. Avomam midden bekevas nevelo bekevas shchitas over tuchavim. But you are allowed to use the keva, meaning the milk that you found in the stomach of a nevelo or an animal shechted by a goy. Again, we're not concerned about Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that he may have shechted it for avodah zarah. Over kevas kshera shiyonkam and atzleifa, you're also allowed to use the stomach contents of a kosher animal, shiyonkam and atzleifa, that nursed from a tzleifa animal, because as we said in our Mishnah, we said in our Mishnah that the keva is osur, but nevertheless,
the kosher animal
that nursed from a non-kosher animal, nevertheless, you would be allowed to because it's considered pirsha ba'alma, because it's considered, now, that does not work according to Rashi. And in fact, you notice that this line and a half over here is in parenthesis. And the reason is because the Maharshal and the Maharam point out, according to Rashi, this part doesn't belong over here. Because according to Rashi, if it's Tirsh Ba'alma, then it's, you can't say it's Tirsh Ba'alma. Rashi holds it's considered actual milk still. So the Tosfos allows it because they say that after all they take the middle ground that it depends whether the milk is still liquid or whether it's already partially congealed. Rashi would disagree with that. The Rif, of course, would also disagree with Rashi. The Rif and the Rambam, and they would have this piece in their Gemaras, and in fact they paskin accordingly that yes, you are allowed to use a keva of a ksheira sheyankam and a tereva. You're allowed to use any keva. In other words, you're allowed to use any milk that was in the stomach, whether it's runny or whether it's congealed, as long as it wasn't from shchitas over to chavim, because not shchitas avodah zarah, rather from shchitas avodah zarah, everything including perish is also. But otherwise, the cholshikin keva treifah sheyonkim nachshera. How much more so you would be allowed to use the milk that you found in the stomach of a treifah animal that nursed from a kosher animal? My time, why is that cholav amachonis ba pirsha ba'alma? Because the milk that you find, if collected in the stomach, is considered pirsha ba'alma. It's just considered waste. A treifah that nursed from a kshera. Obviously, the milk came from a kosher source. But even the other way around, even a kshera sheyonkim and a treifah, it's still considered pirsha ba'alma. Again, according to Rashi, that wouldn't follow. But according to everybody else, also does.
Do we hold like Rashi? We don't.
We do not. We hold like Tosfos and like the other Rishonim that say that. Well, if I remember correctly, the actual accepted halacha is actually like the Rambam and the Rif that it doesn't matter the state of it. Keva is keva. Either way, it's Pirsha Balma. I'm not completely sure about that, but I think so. And in any case, so that's that. Then
it doesn't matter whether.
But again, when you're using the stomach lining, then it's different. If it comes from a kosher animal and it was salted and dried out, then it's mutter according to the Rama, even machila. If not, then it's only mutter b'dieved, as we said in our Mishnah. And if it came from a nevela or what have you, then forget it. The whole cheese is on.
We don't use ur today.
Today, I don't think they, practically speaking, they use ur. I'm pretty sure they use either something. They use either synthetic or plant.
Traditional cheeses, because cheeses.
Depends. I don't know.
You know, gourmet kind of stuff.
Could be. So maybe some of them use actual rennet. Yeah.
So
but whether
use a pig's caver, basically.
No, that's the thing. We're saying, well, the caver, yes. The caver, yes. Again, technically, yes. Although Tosfos says the belt already holds that it's also. So therefore,
well,
they don't.
The reason why is because a pig will not have, if it's pig milk, it will not make cheese.
Well, no, but he's talking about using the contents as starter, though. He's talking about using the rennet from it. The rennet, that might be different.
But here,
let's see what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So, cholav animtza b'keva. So if it was salted inside the stomach, or it stayed in the stomach for one day, then it's kavush. Also, lahamid bo, then you're not allowed to use it to make cheese. And if you did, then the Ramah says you have a distinction between whether it's the clear stuff or whether it's the congealed stuff. Because then, if it's congealed, then you have Tosfos' opinion that already it's considered pirush ba'alma. So then the Rambam goes on to say that sometimes they take the ur hakeva, the skin, and they dry it out, and so they salt it and dry it out. It becomes like wood, and then they fill it with milk. That would be mutter, because then it's already considered just like wood. Then it doesn't give a taste.
With kosher milk.
Yeah. Then it goes on to say, if you make cheese with the lining of the keva of a kshera, if it has the taste of meat, then it's also. If not, then it's mutter. But if you were to use the keva, the skin of the keva of an avelo, a tereva, or a behemoth mea, then oysa b'chol shehu, because the davar mamin, and davar mamin is a filo be'elof le'bot.
Where's the discussion of Zev Zegorim? Is that in our Gemara?
No, our Gemara is not taking up that.
We're not getting there.
No. Because not really Zev Zegorim. You have, there's only really one Gerim.
And then you like Kerem, Zev Zegorim.
Yeah, it comes up in Avodah Zarah in connection. Yeah, it comes up in Avodah Zarah. It comes up in other places. Yeah,
but right. It comes up around the
because he was asking. All right, let's try. This last Mishnah of our Perek doesn't seem to have anything directly to do with our Perek. We're off the topic of Basa B'Cholav now, and we're getting on to the topic of Chelev and Dam. So the question is, what exactly is this Mishnah doing over here? Okay, let's learn the Mishnah first, and then we'll talk about a couple of possibilities. Mishnah says, Chomer b'chelev mi b'dam, v'chomer b'dam mi b'chelev. You have a certain chomra in chelev over blood, and you have a certain other chomra in blood over chelev. Chomer b'chelev, you have a chomra when it comes to chelev, sha'chelev moyalin boy, because first of all, if the chelev, if the animal...
What does it mean,
chomer? Means there's a chomra.
Chomer,
okay. Chomer, chomer, yeah. So there's a chumrah that you find in chelev, which you don't find in dam, namely that if the animal that the, if the animal that this chelev came from is kodshim, if it's a if it's an animal of kodshim, then ne'ilah applies to the chelev. But on the other hand, it doesn't apply to the dam, as we'll see in the Gemara. V'chayov in olav mishum pigul v'nois of a tameh. Also, if a person eats the chelev of this korban, when the korban was pigul or noiser or tameh, then Tomei, Rashi says specifically, we're talking about, let's say, for example, the person was Tomei, and he ate this chelev. He's going to be chayav two chatos, one for chelev and one for tumas aguf. Marsha points out, why doesn't Rashi just say the case where the korban as a whole became Tomei, and he says, because then there would only be an Isser, then there would only be a lava bummy called Esser to not eat it, and that can't be chal on top of the Isser of chelev, because the ain't chal al Isser, unless it's a stronger Isser. But here, where you have, if you're talking about, no, but okay, according to the accepted opinion, Mahalocha, in Isu Chalal Isur, almost it's an Isu Kolol, Isu Moisif, or Isu Basachas, whatever, and here you don't have that. As opposed to, if you're talking about that the person himself is Tomei, then it's an Isu Koreis, so then therefore that's an Isu Moisif. Okay. Masha'enkin, Badam, all of these things are not like that with Dam, with blood, that
only...
But for example, the issur that you would have with a kodshim or tameh and a person eats them, which is only a lav, or depending on the circumstances, may only be an issur esser, then that can't be chal on top of the issur of that can't be chal on top of the issur of chelev. Yeah. Okay. So there's the chumra in chelev over dam. V'chomer b'dam. On the other hand, you have a chumra when it comes to blood. Shadam noig b'behema chaya v'oif ben tmeim ben tahorim. Because the issue of blood applies to behema chaya and oif, to domestic and wild animals and birds, ben tmeim ben tahorim, whether they're tamei or whether they're tahor. V'chelev ene noig ala b'behema tahora b'obam. Whereas chelev only applies to a behema tahora, you're allowed to eat the chelev of a wild kosher animal, and you're allowed to eat the chelev of a kosher bird. So that's the chumra in dam over chelev. Now, so the question again is, what is this Mishnah doing over here? It seems to have nothing to do with the subject of our parrot. So the Tosfos Yom Tov says the reason is because since the end of the Mishnah mentions that the Isur Dam applies to Behema Chaya and Oif, so therefore it's somewhat similar to what we learned earlier in our Perek when we had a couple of Mishnayos ago when we discussed about whether Basa B'Cholav applies to Behema Chaya and Oif or whether it applies only to Behema. No, once we finish with Basa B'Cholav, then we get back to that. Then we mention something else incidentally that's similar. That's the Tosfos Yom Tov says that. The Melamed Lahoyo, Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, has a very interesting take on it, which is that I mentioned on the WhatsApp group something about the proto-Mishnah. We know that many parts of the Mishnah existed long before Rebbe compiled the Mishnah. We have many, many proofs of that. And in fact, you have Gemara, I think, in Chagiga that talks about 600 or 700 Sidrei Mishnah that they had before Rebbe's time. The Alter Rebbe mentions it. The Alter Rebbe mentions it in. No, we don't. That's the thing. The Alter Rebbe mentions it. By the way, in Igeres Chavav and Tanya, talking about the question, what did Reb Shimon ben Yochai and Reb Elazar learn the whole 12 and 13 years that they were in the cave? They couldn't have only been learning the Zohar. It didn't take that long to go through the whole Zohar. Necessarily, they must have mostly been learning Nigla. And what Nigla were they learning? That's 600 Sidrei Mishnayos to go through. And this is before Rebbe even. This is before Rebbe. Reb Shimon and Reb Elazar are in the generation before Rebbe. Reb Elazar is a contemporary of Rebbe. So, yeah.
They were answering very Pinchas and
So the Melamed Lahoyel points out like this. We had earlier in our parak, we had a discussion about the question, if a person cooks chalev in cholov, what happens? Is he chayev for basa b'cholov? And also, what happens if he cooks dam in cholov? Now, we said over there that we mentioned over there that actually he would be chayev for chalev. He would be chayev for chalev on the grounds if we say isur chalal isur.
Chalev and dam.
Chalev and milk. Chalev and cholov. But he would be potter. Shmuel had said he'd be potter for dam, because dam is not considered dee. So what may have happened? What may have happened over here? The Malamed Lahoyel says is in an earlier edition of the Mishnah, in one of the proto versions of the Mishnah, there may have been a Mishnah in our Perek that mentioned the dinim about chalev with cholov or dam with cholov. In the end, it was taken out because chalev with cholov is a davar poshut. It's obvious that it's chayev, and that dam with cholov
by itself is
right. And the chalav, but nevertheless, because the iser chalav iser, because the iser of a boss of a chalav is able to be chal on it. And on the other hand, dam with chalav is equally obviously potter. And therefore that was taken out. But therefore, our Mishnah, which starts talking about chalav and dam and chalav, was left over. Sometimes iser chalav iser. Again, if it's an iser chalav, iser moisif, whatever. In this particular case, we said over there, actually, we discussed in the sugya the other day, we said that if you cook chalav and cholav together, actually, no, what we said is no. We said, actually, if you eat chalav and cholav together, you're actually not chayev for basa b'cholav because ain't yisr chalal isr. But if you cook them together, then you chayev because there's no other isr. There's no isr to cook chalav. So actually, that was the point. To eat chalav and cholav, a person is potter for basa b'cholav. You'd be chayev for chalav, but they'd be potter.
So when do you use chal and when you don't use chal?
In general, an isur chalal isur. Unless it's an isur kolol, isur moisif, or isur basachas. Although you have many different opinions of Tanoim on that subject. So therefore, when we discussed the other day the question of if you cook chalev with cholov and eat them, are you chayev for the cooking, are you chayev for the eating? So one possibility is there's a Malamed Lahoyel saying there may have been a Mishnah in our parish following some of the Tanoim who say that in general Isur Chalal Isur, who would have said therefore that if you eat Chalav with Cholav, then you're Chayav. And if you cook, on the other hand, if you cook or eat Dam with Cholav, then you're not, because Dam is not considered Gidi. Later on, they took that out because one part of it is not necessarily a liberty hill. So the part about chalav and cholav, if you eat them together, the fact is you're not chayav. The part about dam would have been very, very obvious, because dam is not gedi. And therefore, they took that out, but therefore our Mishnah was left as like an appendix to that. Once we're mentioning dam and chalav, so our Mishnah also comes in and mentions other distinctions between them. Okay, so that's what he says, anyway. All right. That's the Malamed Lahoyel. He lived 100-odd years ago. Malamed Lahoyel was the name of his sefer of Shilas Atrovas, but he also wrote a number of svarim and essays and whatever on different aspects of Jewish history and history. Reb David Tzvi Hoffman was his name. He was the dean of the Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim in Berlin until the 1920s or so. Okay, fine. So the Gemara starts off. Menohani Mirim. Where do we know this that we said in the Mishnah that chaylev of a korban is subject to me'ila? Now, we usually have a distinction with Me'ilah when we, later this year, Beis Hashem, when we learn Masechta Me'ilah, we'll talk about there's a basic distinction in Me'ilah between Kodshei Kodshim and Kodshim Kalim. Kodshei Kodshim, Me'ilah applies to them while they're alive. Kodshim Kalim, it does not, only after they're shechted, and then Me'ilah applies to the Emurim, to the Chelev of them. But how do we know that? The answer is Omer Abyanai, like this, the Omakro, because you have a pasuk that mentions in connection with the power of Kohen Mashiach, the power that the Kohen Gadol brings if he made a mistake in Halacha and followed it. We learned about it in Horius. So the pasuk says, so the pasuk describes how he has to take out all the emurim and burn them on the mizbeach. So the pasuk lists all the emurim that he has to take out, and then it says, "Kasher yuram mishor zevach hashlamim." Just like you take out from an ox that's brought as a shlamim, those are the exact same emurim you have to take out over here. And the question is, what exactly are we supposed to be learning from Shor Zevach HaShlomim? We have the entire list of Emurim is repeated here by the Power Kohen Mashiach. So what does it have to say like the Shor Zevach HaShlomim? Once it says whatever, the entire list, so there's no reason to say like the Shor Zevach HaShlomim. We ourselves can look in the previous parak and compare and see that it's the exact same list. What it is Hareza Bala Lamed Benim Salamid. It looks like the Pasuk is trying to teach us from something about Shlomim that we should learn something about the power of Kohen Mashiach. That's Hareza Bala Lamed. Benim Salamid, but it comes out the other way around. We wind up from this Pasuk, we're learning out something from the power of Kohen Mashiach to the Shlomim. And what are we learning out? Ma Par Kohen Mashiach Yesh by Me'ilah, just like Me'ilah applies to the power of Kohen Mashiach. To Etzimurim, namely, because Me'ilah applied to the whole thing while it was alive. It's Kodshei Kodshim, and we know Me'ilah applies to Kodshei Kodshim even while they're alive. Therefore, af shur zeva hashlamim yesh b'meila. From that we learn that also the shur zeva hashlamim, the chaylev of it, which we're listing in these sukkim, that me'ila applies to it as well. That is what we're learning from kasher yuram mishur zeva hashlamim.
Otherwise,
you would have thought that me'ila doesn't apply to the emotim of a shlamim. Because it's kodshim kalim. If me'ila doesn't apply to it while it's alive, then why should it apply to it after it's shechted? Now we know from this pasuk, but not. However, amalei Rav Chanina, however, Rav Chanina says to Rav Yanai, why do you have to learn it from there? Ka'ura zu shashana Rebbe. Is it ugly in your eyes, this that Rebbe taught, a different source for this din? That when the pasuk says, kol chaylev l'Hashem, that all the chaylev goes to Hashem, that means l'rabbet emuri kodshim kalim l'me'ila. That comes to teach us that also the emurim of kodshim kalim are subject to me'ila. So why do you have to learn it out from kasher yuram?
That's what he said.
So that's the Rav Chanina saying to Rav Yanai, that we have a different way. Amar Abaye Itzri. However, Abaye in a later generation says, actually, we do need Rav Yanai's limud as well. Yeah. The Ikos Rahman Chelev, because if you only had Rav Chanina's and Rebbe's Pasuk Kol Chelev Hashem, Hava Amina, then you would think, fine, that din of Me'ila applies only to the Chelev. Chelev Ein, Yeseres or Shekloyes Loi. When you get down to it, the Emurim doesn't include only Chelev. The Emurim also includes parts that are not chaylev, they're not fat, but nevertheless, there's a cost of that to be offered on the mizbeach. The yeseres, which is the diaphragm, and part of the liver along with it,
so
the shtei kloyes, we wouldn't have thought it. It doesn't apply if it's just kol chaylev l'Hashem. Yeah, we would have said that me'ila only applies to the actual fat of the shlomim that's brought on the mizbeach for chaylev. We wouldn't have known that it also applies to the yeseres and to the two kidneys. Therefore, kasev rachmana kasher yuram. Therefore, the pasuk says kasher yuram, and as taken off from the shows of a hashlamim, so it's also taken off from the parakoyin mashiach, and therefore, in other words, and there it lists the yeseres and it lists the shekoyes. They're part of the emurim. Therefore, we know the din applies to them also.
The ikos rachmana
kasher yuram. But if the pasuk only mentioned, if we only have the limud from kasher yuram, have amina, then we would think chelav alya the lesser b'sher loy. Maybe me'ila does not apply to the fat of the alya of the fat tail, which you don't have that in an ox. Now you have, remember, there's three kinds of land animals that you can bring as korbanos: cows, sheep, and goats. Sheep, in certain breeds of sheep, store a lot of fat in their tail. I think the idea of it is they use it as an extra store of energy when times are lean, whatever it is. The point is, the Torah tells us that you have to offer the alya on the mizbeach, but only from a sheep. You don't offer the tail from a goat or from a cow. So therefore, if you only have the pasuk kasher yuram, then fine, you have everything that's listed over there by a shur, but the alya is not listed because it doesn't apply to a shur, so you wouldn't know that me'ila applies to an alya of a korban that has an alya, namely a sheep. Therefore, kasher rachmana kochelev, therefore the pasuk also had to write kochelev to say that me'ila applies to that as well. So we end up needing both, we end up needing both pesukim. Okay, so now the question becomes, amalei mori l'rav zid, if you're telling me that the alya, that the tail is called chaylev, included in the concept of kol chaylev, titsa ba'achila. No, the question is, titsa ba'achila should be also to eat. We know you're not allowed to eat chaylev, so how are you allowed to eat the alya? And the fact is, you are allowed to eat the alya.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we know? Amalei, sort of Zvid answers, alecha amakra, because of you, to answer your objection, the pasuk says, kol chaylev shor v'ketzev o'ez, or chaylev of an ox or a sheep or a goat, meaning what is chaylev? Davar ashava b'sher v'kesev v'eiz. Only something that you find equally by a shur or a kesev or an eiz, which is not the alya. So therefore, the alya is excluded on the basis of those words, kol chaylev. Kol chaylev shur v'kesev v'eiz. Because since it mentions all three species, shur v'kesev v'eiz, it means it only applies to something where you have by all three of them. And this, you don't. You only have an alya on a kebab. Right. So therefore, it means it's excluded. Rav Ashi says, I have a different way of learning of learning that the alya is not called chaylev as far as being also to eat. Because chelboi ha'alya ikroi, because the chaylev ha'alya ikroi, because it's called chelboi only, the alya is called chaylev only insofar as when the pasuk says chelboi, that it's fat, it meaning that it's best part. Chelboi means not only fat, chelboi, the word chaylev can also mean the best quality stuff. Kol chaylev Hashem doesn't just mean the fat goes to Hashem, it means all the best quality.
So yeah, for example.
Yeah, we say in davening, for example, chaylev chitim yasbiyeh. It doesn't mean fat, it means the best quality. So therefore, chelboi, ha'alya ikri, chelev stomer lo ikri.
the alya is called chelboy ha'alya. It's called fat of the alya. It's not just called plain chelim. Only what's called plain chelim is also. So the question is, by that logic, you should say me'ilah shouldn't apply to it either. Again, because it's not considered part of the chelim.
It's not quality, basically.
And well, it is quality, but nevertheless, if you're telling me that it's not called chelim plain, and we had one of our lemudim was from the word kol chelim, and one, remember, we said before, we have kasher yuram, and we have kol chelim. And we're saying, because it says kol chelim, therefore it includes the alya. But if you're telling me now that the alya is not even really called chelim, it's only called chelboy alya, then it shouldn't be included, and me'ilah shouldn't apply to it. So that doesn't work. Obviously, the correct answer is the way Rav Zvid said, that because the pasuk says, kochelev shor v'kesev v'eiz, so therefore only something that you find in all three of them is osir, and the aliyah is not. That's the point. In other words, so therefore we rejected what Rav Ashi said. The Ramban points out on the pasuk when it mentions the aliyah, the Ramban points out, and we've talked about this before, when we talk about chelev in the previous parak, the Ramban learns that chelev is actually physically distinct from shuman. You have fat in many different places in the body, and in particular, you have certain kinds of fat which have certain physical characteristics that make them be called chelev. The alya is not in that category. So it's called chelev. It's just regular fat. So insofar, we learned earlier in the Masechta, the choice of krum menikvah that has a membrane over it, it can be peeled off, etc., it drapes like a sheet. The alya is not like that. So therefore, it is called chelev as far as being the best quality part of the animal, but it's not called chelev as far as being osur. Okay, fine. Then we said in the Mishnah, Masha'enken Badam, we said on the other hand, Mi'ila does not apply to blood of Korbanos. So the question is, Minani Mi'ila, where do we know that from? The answer is, Oma'ula, Do'oma'kra, because the Pasuk says, Lochem, the Pasuk says, that Hashem says, I gave for you the blood to be for Kapara, implying, Shalachem Yehei, implying that it's for you, it's for you to use. So therefore, it's not considered Kodshim. If it's considered Kodshim, you can't use it. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a different way of learning, because the pasuk continues, L'chaper, that Hashem says, I gave you the blood to be mechaper, implying l'chapara, nesativ v'loy l'me'ila. I gave it to you for the purpose of accomplishing kapara. I didn't give it to you such that you should have a problem of me'ila with it. So therefore, me'ila doesn't apply. Rabbi Yochanan says differently, Oma krov hu, because the pasuk says, ki adam hu ba'nefesh yechaper. By the way, the reason why Ula lived long after Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel. So why aren't we listing them first Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, then Rabbi Yechon, and then Ula, who was a Talmud? The reason is because we're listing them in the order in which they're darshaning from the psukim, from the pasuk. They're all darshaning phrases from the same pasuk, but Ula's word lachem comes before the word lachaper, which in turn comes before the word hu. Okay. So Rabbi Yechon, Amakro hu, the pasuk says that I made it. Meaning who means it has the same status all the time. Sort of like, you know, we're just coming from Purim now. The Gemara mentions, for example, that when it says, hu achashverish, means who berushim is kolos v'adzofi. It's the same Rasha from beginning to end. The word who means that a person or a thing or whatever is constant.
Like the Yiddish too, we said who.
Well, but also the Gemara mentions over there, you have various tzaddikim, for example, Avram hu Avraham. Who are in a Moshe, etc. Yeah. So who over here means that it has the same status, who lifnei kapara to la'acha kapara, meaning the blood has the same status as far as the dinim of me'ila before kapara, before you sprinkle it on the mizbeach, as it has after kapara. Ma la'acha kapara ein by me'ila, just like after you sprinkle it, no me'ila applies to it, as we're going to show in a second why that should be so. Af lifnei kapara ein by me'ila, the same thing, before you use it for kapara, it also, me'ila doesn't apply to it. Okay, so the question is, maybe make the comparison the other way around. Maybe say that even la'acha kapara, mi'ila does apply, just like it applies before kapara. Say, mal lifnei kapara yeshma mi'ila, we should assume that it's like any other part of the korban, and therefore mi'ila would apply before the kapara. Af la'acha kapara yeshma mi'ila, so the same thing should apply la'acha kapara. Why not? The answer is we can't, because we have a basic rule. You never find something that the mitzvah has been accomplished with it and me'ilah would still apply to it. That me'ilah should still apply to it.
Before
Zrika, once after Zrika has been done, after Kapara has been done. Yeah, exactly.
So the, and therefore, once it's established that after kapara, after zrika, me'ila doesn't apply, of necessity, the word who must be teaching us before. So the question is, Haloi, are you telling me not? I can give you an example of something where not this mitzvah say, and yet more than both. But it's true mitzvahdeshin. What about the ashes that the Kohen takes off the mizbeach every morning? The nas the mitzvah say, more than both. The mitzvah has been done once you take it off the mizbeach and put it on the floor. The mitzvah has been done, and me'ila still applies. Dichtiv, and we know that because the pasuk is v'samoy eitzel mizbeach. He should place it next to the mizbeach, which means it has to be buried over there. It has to be, you have to be put it over there.
That's going to be stuff.
One second,
you would think after it goes.
No. In other words, it's also forever, and therefore the only thing that actually the Gemara mentions elsewhere that a nest would happen and it would get swallowed up into the ground. The reason is to prevent people from accidentally doing me'ila with it. But if a person, let's say, were to dig it out from underground and use it, he would still be chayav for me'ila, even though not as mitzvah.
So that's an exception.
So you see that. So the answer is Mishum Da'aboy, Truma Sadeshin, or Big De Kohuna, Shneksu Maboyim Kacham. The answer is because, yes, you have that din by Truma Sadeshin, but you also have it by the Begodim of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, which also Nasus Mitzvotin Moilin Behen. Therefore, you have two psukim where the same din is taught. And as we know, V'chol Shneksu Maboyim Kachod Ein Malam Din, when you have two psukim that teach us the same thing, means it applies only to them, nothing else. Therefore, it can't apply to anything else other than Truma Sadeshin. Namely, what is it by the Big De Kohuna? The Pasuk says, so now we have the Kohen Gadol goes twice into the Kodesh, it goes four times altogether, whatever, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, wearing two different outfits, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, and that both of them are Big De Lavan. And the din is that once he uses them, they have to be put in Gniza, they can never be used. So even though Nasus mitzvah, so he accomplished the mitzvah of Yom Kippur with them, nevertheless, there's still also Bana, but only those in Shema Kadesh and nothing else. So the question is, Hamnichal Rabbanan, okay, that works according to the Rabbanan. The Amri, where they understand those words, V'hinicham Sham, the Pasuk says that the Kohen Gadol takes off these clothes and leaves them there. They learn that means Malama Chitun and Gniza, that those clothes have to be put in Gniza and they can never be used again, not by him and not by any other Kohen Gadol. But according to Rav Dosa, who says that actually a Kohen Hed yet could use them the rest of the year, it's just V'nicham Sham, which means he can't use them for next year's Yom Kippur Avodah, but a regular Kohen, remember, they're big, they love them, they're the same clothes as a Kohen Hed yet wears the rest of the year. So Rav Dosa says a Kohen Hed yet could wear them any other day of the year, so they don't need them. So of course, so according to Rav Dosa, Michael Amema, what are you going to say according to him? You don't have two snakes on my bone pachad, you only have Truma Sadeshin. Why aren't you learning from it to something else? The answer is Elamishrim Dahavoy Truma Sadeshin Ve'egla Arufa Snakes on my bone pachad. The answer is fine. Forget about Big Dekon Gobble, but we also have the Egla Arufa, where we have the same concept that even though the mitzvah has been done, its neck was broken in the valley over there. Nevertheless, it's still also Bahana, and we know that because after it's been right. So therefore, again, the whole shneksum aboyim kachod ein melamdin. So the question is, hanuich lamandoma ein melamdin. Okay, that all works according to the opinion of the chachamim that once you have two psukim that teach us the same thing, then ein melamdin. El lamandoma melamdin, but according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who says that even when you have two psukim that teach us the same thing, you could still make a binyan out from them. I'm showing bone tachod, right? You could still make a binyan av from them to other things. So why don't we make a binyan av from that to dam? Rabbi Yehuda says that. So therefore, according to him, what are you going to say? Why don't we say that dam and other things that nasa mitzvah say? The answer is, shrei mi'uti k'siv. The answer is yes, but we have two mi'utim in the psukim. Hacha k'siv v'sam mo'i. By Truma Sadeshen, the pasuk says he should place it, meaning that the din applies only to it, not something else. And Hosam Ksiv Ha Arufa, and by the Egla Arufa, it also says Ha Arufa, the one that was decapitated, meaning that it applies only to that. So once we have those two miyotim, and actually Tosfos asked, why do we even need two miyotim on the face of it? We could have done with only one. But the point is, even Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree that over here you can't learn from them to other things.
Ha Arufa and
the Sam Mo.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to need that.
Yeah. Now, before we finish up over here, one thing we should point out, there is actually a case where Me'ila does apply to the blood. Namely, the Mishnah tells us in Yuma, and the Gemara explains over there, that, so what happened, the blood that was sprinkled or poured or whatever on the Mizbeach eventually would drain into a channel that ran under the Mizbeach called the Shisin. Eventually, it went out through a hole or a pipe or whatever into Nachal Kidron, the deep valley east of Yerushalayim. And there, the Mishnah says they would sell the dried, congealed blood over there. They'd sell it to gardeners to use for fertilizer. And the Mishnah says over there, Umoylim behen, that Me'ilah would apply to that blood. Now, on the basis of our Gemara over here, it shouldn't, because Nafis Mitzvah said, the Mitzvah has already been accomplished with it, Me'ilah shouldn't apply. The Gemara explains over there, the Chachamim put a din of Me'ilah on it, so that people aren't just using it stana, Zoe, so that people, should have, so that's Midrabban. Here we're talking Daradaisa.
What about the blood of an Oila? Normally, technically, you should not be able to use it.
No, that's the point. In other words, the Me'ila applies to the meat and the Imurim and everything of the Oila, because they're all burnt on the Mizbeach. But based on what we're saying over here, Me'ila does not apply to the blood of the carbon.
Even though an Oila has to be burnt?
Even though, yeah, because the blood is sprinkled on the Mizbeach, the rest is poured on the Yisoid. But nevertheless, Me'ila does not apply to that blood. If a person were to use that blood for some other purpose, he wouldn't be chai for Me'ila. So the question is, okay, we have now three different ways of learning how we know the Me'ilah doesn't apply to blood. We had Ula learning from Lachem. We had Tonet V'Rabbi Shmuel, who learned from Lachaper. And we had Rabbi Yochanan learning from who? So why do we need three different Me'ilahs? The answer is, one teaches us that Noiser does not apply to blood. That, in other words, so Rashi says, if let's say, for example, the you have blood of a korban that was left over after the time that when the korban was supposed to be offered, so the blood became posel. Let's say we're talking about enough of blood was sprinkled on the mizbeach. Well, yeah, it's supposed to be offered on the mizbeach that day. We learned in Zvachim, when we learned in Zvachim, that blood becomes posel by Shkiyas Hachama.
After one extra hour, or immediately after?
No, by Shkiyas Hachama. So if you brought a korban, again, let's say, in other words, enough blood of the korban was sprinkled on the mizbeach that the korban itself is kosher, but now you were supposed to pour the shirayim on the yisoid. Instead, you didn't, so it became noser, or even let's say the korban as a whole became noser, and along with the blood. Now, let's say, for example, a person ate it. Whether the shgaga was that he didn't know that you're also to eat blood, whether it's that he didn't know you're also to eat noiser, either way, he's not bringing a chafas for noiser, he's bringing a chafas for dam. So that's one thing. That's one thing we learn from one of these miyotim. We learn that noiser doesn't apply to blood. V'chad l'ma'utim mi'ila. The second one teaches us that mi'ila doesn't apply, as we've been saying. V'chad l'ma'utim mi'tumah. And the third one teaches us that if a person who's tome, that's why he needs to be. The third one teaches us that if a person who's tome drinks the blood of a korban, then again, he's not chayav for eating a korban when he's tome, which would be chayav koris b'mezid or chatas b'shogig, or a korban or the b'yodid, rather b'shogig. He's only chayav a chatas for dam. Well, he's chayav koris if it was b'mezid, if he knew it was dam, but b'shogig he'd be bringing a chatas for dam, not a korban or the b'yodid for eating kodshim b'tome. So that's the third meal. Now you could ask, in that case, don't we also need another pasuk to teach us that pigle doesn't apply to blood? That again, if a person were to eat blood from a korban that's pigle, that he wouldn't be chayev from pigle. No, you can't, because each one of those, noiser and me'ilah and truma, each have unique features of their own. But we don't need leitzarech kra, because we don't even need a pasuk for it. It's not, because we learned in Zvachim, kol sheyesh le'matirin, anything that has something else that is matirit, to be eaten or to be burnt on the mizbeach, bein la'odim or bein la'mizbeach, whether it's something that's matir it to be eaten by people, or whether it's something that's matir the pieces of it to be burnt on the mizbeach, chayavin olam mishum pigul, then a person is chayav for it for pigul. So for example, let's say for example, the meat of kodshim, like this, before you sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach, the meat is osur to eat. Once you sprinkle the blood, the meat becomes mutar to eat. Therefore, the blood is the matir for the meat. The meat is the nitter, and therefore pigul applies to it. Let's say, for example, when it comes to a korban mincha, you have the koymes as the matir, and the rest of the mincha is the nitter, and so on and so forth.
So
pigul applies to the nitter where there is a matir. And the same thing also, if it's something that's matir, these things to be burnt on the mizbeach. For example, Rashi gives the example, let's say it was an ola. Only after you sprinkle the blood of the ola on the mizbeach, only then can you burn the emurim and the pieces of it on the mizbeach. Before that, you can't. Therefore, the blood is the matir for the ola, for the emurim and the pieces of the ola. The dam gufei matir hu, whereas the blood itself is the matir, and we know therefore automatically that pigul doesn't apply to the matir. We learned in Zvachim, for example, for that reason, pigul doesn't apply to the blood, pigul doesn't apply to the koimet, so it's also a matir.
So for every matir, pigul doesn't apply.
Right. Actually, we talked about the koimet, maybe it's not so simple because you have the koimet and the lavoina, and you have two parts of a matir, but whatever. You have the basic concept of the matir, that pigul does not apply to the matir, to something that makes the rest of the korban able to be eaten by people or able to be burnt on the mizbeach. And dam is an example of a matir. Therefore, automatically, pickle doesn't apply to it, so we don't even need a pasuk to tell us it doesn't apply.
And therefore,
That's it. So therefore, we didn't need to be mamayik blood from pickle. We only needed to be mamayik it from noso and tome and meila. And that's why we have three words in the pasuk. Lachem, lachaper, and hu. To be mamayik these three things.
If it was the pickle, you would need a
fourth one. Then we would need a fourth one, but we don't need, because we know automatically by the basic rules of pickle, that we know from the basic rules of pickle that blood, that it doesn't apply to blood. Yeah. Okay. Hadron alach kol abasar.